Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
Today, another sneak peek from our WBUR City Space series called Phenomenal Women. The series features in-depth conversations with women who have broken through as leaders in fields historically dominated by men. From scientists to athletes, journalists to artists, we will highlight women who have risen to the top of their fields and ask them about their journeys, how they became who they are today, what it took to break through and blaze new trails, and the advice they'd give to other women who are hoping to shatter ceilings. Last month, we talked to Katie Ray, CEO and managing partner of The Engine, a venture capital program built and spun out by MIT. This month, we spoke with two rock stars from the world of biotech, Dr. Pardis Sabeti, who heads her own lab, mapping the genome to discover new cures for diseases, and Dr. Eva Brennan, president and CEO of Synlogic Incorporated, which is a clinical stage company that creates transformative medicines. And I have to say, after talking with them for an hour, these are two truly phenomenal women. Today, we're bringing you a couple of the highlights from that conversation, and we start with a question I asked both of them. Thinking back, however long ago it might be, what was the first time you remember breaking a glass ceiling or defying an expectation of what girls can and can't do? Dr. Brennan weighed in first.
So I've been reflecting on this a lot recently, and I think that most of my insights about myself have come in hearing myself reflected on someone else. If you know, somebody tries to put me in a box and I react to that by saying, hold on a second, you've got me wrong. And the first time that happened was in high school when, I grew up in Ireland. I went to a high school, a Catholic girls' high school, very traditional. You know, we did home economics, not a huge focus on the sciences. And when I went to my career guidance counselor, and, you know, we were exploring what I might like to do. And she thought, well, you know, you're going to want to get married soon and have a family. You know, I think a job where you can have the summers off, like teaching, could be a really good fit for you. And I'm like, hold on a sec. You know, this is not me. You haven't listened to what I like to do. You don't know anything about me. And just had a really negative reaction. But I knew enough to not push back and to just nod and agree in the moment. But I think it actually triggered something in me to push back against that definition or that box that I was, you know, being conveniently placed into, and actually forced me to really think about myself and what it was I wanted to do. And I think that was the first time I realized, well, you know, not all adults know what's best for you. Not all adults give good advice. Not everyone will give you. She was very well-intentioned, but, and I didn't necessarily have an obligation to follow it. So I think that was the first kind of career rebellion, if you will, growing up, and really pushed me to work harder, to, you know, be more ambitious. So maybe had the opposite to effect in terms of what she was thinking of me. So I think that's the earliest example I can think of. And looking back over my my life to date.
How about you, Pardis?
I just thought of two examples. It's funny because it's not necessarily in like my job or my career where I felt that kind of like girls don't do that kind of feeling. I mean, obviously you come across it in many ways in your life more insidiously as you get in life and work. The funny thing is I would say like I have two really like clear memories of just one day, I was like in sixth or seventh grade, and the boys would always play football like during lunch. And, you know, one day somebody invited me to play or something, and I went and I played, and I remember just that I fell in love with it. Like, I loved it so much. I was like, oh my God, I want to do this every single day. And I just like came out and I was so excited. And I just had, it's like literally like the light turned on, and it was like the funnest experience I ever had. And I remember going often and having the cool, I was very uncool, and the cool girls like wanting to talk to me, and I'm like, oh my gosh, like, hi. And they're like, yeah, what are you doing? And I was like, oh my God, and I'm playing football. It's like so fun. You guys should come play. And they're like, no, like girls don't do that. And they're just like so disgusted with me. They're just saying, girls don't do that. I mean, this, I don't know if it's going to give away something about me, but then later I love concerts, and the same thing happened where I went to a concert and I used to like the mosh pit, and I was in the mosh pit and I was like having this, I'm like, this is so fun. Like we're all just banging against each other. It's really fun. And I came out and one of the popular girls was like, what are you doing? Like, what are you even doing? And I was like, it's so fun. You got to try this. And it's interesting to me, like the two experiences I have are other women telling me what I was and was not allowed to be doing. And I was like a painfully oblivious person, which is why I was quite unpopular. I was like popular, unpopular. Like all the popular boys liked me in math class, but then like made fun of me outside of math class. And it was like, I was that kind of a weird kid, that was popular in classrooms and very popular at the lunchroom. I think, you do realize like how much we all self-censor behaviors and tell each other what not to do. And that's actually been, I mean, in a lot of my life, I think a lot of that is, you know, it's so interesting who's holding you back and it's not always the people you expect.
Aoife, nodding, chuckling there. So let me let you just pick up on that.
I'm thinking maybe that's why she ended up in academic medicine, the love of the mosh pit. that was mine.
I got to be a masochist a little bit. Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting. I think you're absolutely right. I think it's something that we all need to be super conscious of, that we don't inadvertently, you know, box somebody else in or inadvertently give those cues. I think we're all kind of mature enough now to not kind of give somebody that's not something girls do, feedback overtly. But I do think there's probably a lot of signals we give off to girls, to, you know, people starting out in their career journey who are maybe looking for reassurance from more established leaders. And I think it's something just that we have to be super conscious about, right? That we don't give off the girls don't do that signal to others coming up through the ranks. So I think I was, really reflecting on that feedback and those experiences you had, Pardis.
So Pardis, we had an audience member who just wants to know what the concert was. Who was the band?
I'm pretty sure I was going to, I think it was Ice-T and the Body Count.
Ice-T and the Body Count.
Yeah, I think it was, yeah. Or like Ministry, something ridiculous, but yeah.
All right, we got to stay in that space. Aoife, first concert you remember going to?
My sister sent me a picture recently. I went to Guns N' Roses in 1992, maybe. And I was, of course, in love with Axl Rose at the time. And I remember being right up front, pretty decent in the mosh pit. It was an absolutely fabulous day. So, that was my first concert experience.
I think this is a thread in these discussions I had not expected to pick up on, but will be in the future for sure. Absolutely.
It's a good way to kick it off. So, I mean, that was not my first concert. That was my first concert. I didn't immediately walk in and start moshing in my first concert ever. But it was the first concert I think I like got into the mosh pit in.
And that is exactly why these live conversations are so fun. You never know where they're going to go. One question I ask every phenomenal woman is, do you see yourself as a leader who happens to be a woman or a woman leader? Doctors Pardis Sabeti and Aoife Brennan, these two women on top in Boston's biotech world, brought their own lived experiences to the answers. Dr. Sabeti went first.
I don't know if I have that kind of resolution. Like, I don't know if I would say that I know the answer to that question. So this might be a very short line with me. I don't know. I mean, I think I would say that the older, other than those kinds of examples of sort of signals, those cues that you get in middle school, that was rough, like, going through my professional life, I actually didn't ever feel as if I was a woman or like I didn't have that sense. And like I said, in the classroom, like that, like all through life, it's like in the classroom, everything was different. Like in the classroom, I was respected and appreciated. And even like, you know, people were really nice to me. Like there's actually this kind of funny thing where it's like in the classroom, they're always like super duper nice to me and everyone was really fun. And so it was like in that way, like in my professional life, I've never thought like man or woman. People just sort of like took it at face value. And only in the last few years, like as you get older and older, like graduate school is probably the first time I started to sense I was a woman. And just by way, the way we were treated and how stark it was, like this was Oxford circa like late 1990s. It was just a very, very gendered place. And you were reminded on a regular basis that you were a woman doing science. So I think that kind of is where it started. And probably over time, you're reminded enough times in many different ways that you are a woman doing this. And I would say like, as I get older, like it's, it gets more ridiculous and frustrating. And so I think there's a certain point where you say, okay, you know what? Like, I am a woman. I'm going to embrace that. I guess I never really, I'm not somebody who really thinks about gender in my like life and appreciate, you know, gender fluidity, gender, like gender, you know, I just don't really think about it. Like, I don't know. I'm not thinking I'm in a room with women or I'm in a room with men. It's not the way I sort of see things. So it's never been something that's on my mind. And mostly probably, and also like having been so much of my life, like for whatever reason, every like advanced math track I was in, I was oftentimes the sole woman in a room full of boys that I just did. I like lost the perspective of what my gender was. Anyway, but also say like, in the last decades, particularly like as a faculty, you're just reminded so often that you're a woman and that you finally like embrace it. And so I would probably say the answer to that question is it's changed. Before I was just a person in science who happened to be a woman. And now I'm like, no, I'm a woman doing science but I'd like to get back to the place, I think, where I'm just a person doing science who happens to be a woman. We're just not there yet. Until we're not there yet, we actually need some people to stand up and say, to sort of speak for us. So I think that's what I try to do where I can.
And how about you, Aoife?
Yeah, I mean, I like Pardis, I really want to get to the place where gender is not a qualifier for leadership, or gender is not a qualifier for, you know, whatever role you're playing professionally. But I'm torn because in order to break through to that place where, you know, it's irrelevant, you know, your gender identity is irrelevant to, you know, your profession and what you're achieving professionally, we have to go through a place where we break the biases about, you know, what does a leader look like? What does a chairman? What does the CEO look like? What does an MIT professor look like? And the only way we get to that place is through representation. So, while I really want to get to a place where it's irrelevant, I do realize that there's going to be a sequence of things we have to go through to make sure that there is gender representation on panels, that we don't have mannels, that we're seeing awards are being awarded to, you know, mixed genders and races and everything else, because representation is so important to breaking those biases. And we all have them, you know, we all have these ingrained ideas and they come out. Sometimes I'm disgusted at myself because you catch yourself doing it. You're like, oh my goodness, that's, you know, my deep subconscious making that connection of, you know, what that phenotype is, you know, that's suitable for chairman or that's suitable for CEO or suitable for CFO or whatever role it is. So, you know, it's a very complex issue and I think it's challenging and it's a long-term dream. We get to the irrelevant place. But in the meantime, the only way we'll get there is by making it relevant and so that we make sure that we have that representation to break down those biases that we all have just kind of because of our upbringing and the social cues that are all around us. You know, I think it's going to take some time.
Go ahead, Pardis. I saw you wanting to add in.
Oh, yeah. You know, I started to and then I was like, man, I'll hold back because it's great. Everything you're saying, I'm totally on board. Although the one counterpoint I will say to that is, yeah, it's true. Like we obviously want to be there and be representing and be available so other people can see like this is what it is, but also have to be true to what it is. Like I have found like, you know, the number of times I've been asked to be on panels where every person on that panel has been awarded something except for me and the other women, is exhausting. It's so exhausting. It's like, here's all the people we funded. And we gave you a baby grant just to like, you know, kiddo, you got some potential. And there you are, either a guest speaker or a seedling grant, because that's just the way they see you. So at one point when I kind of have every once in a while, I have my like, if I had a fake Twitter, what it would say. And I think one of the lines I came up with is, if you're on a panel and you're the only person on that stage that hasn't been supported by the organizer, it's not representation, it's exploitation, like get out of there. And I do feel like that happens all the time where they're like, we just want to see you. We want to see you. And I remember at some point I told one very, you know, big foundation, I was like, you know, I'm not an outbreak entertainer, right? You understand that I actually have like work I do, but they just always want to see you there and they want to showcase you. And to me, I'm like, you know what, be honest about it. Like you got all men, you feel like that all men are going to do this, then just showcase those men and get me. And I have to go back and do my own work and raise my own funds. So good luck with that. Like, I actually want to be a little bit mindful that we don't do the kind of tokenism, feel good stuff that actually ends up burdening women more because they're asked to be on every single panel because they have to make it look like we have representation, we don't. So anyway, that's all to say, like, very different. And as I'm saying that, like, very different from this kind of an event where it's like, we are talking about the real stuff, but it's so often in these kind of other types of meetings, they just grab you to like make it look like they're doing a good job. But when you look under the hood, it's really kind of rough. So
Aoife.
Yeah, no, I'm just thinking back to an episode early on in my career. I stepped into being CEO of my current company. I was the chief medical officer and was promoted. And one of my first calls was with one of our big shareholders who spent the first 15 minutes telling me how excited they were. They hadn't had a portfolio company with a CEO who's female. They were so thrilled. They were going to put me up on their website straight away, blah, blah. And then at the end of the call, oh, by the way, I'm also just letting you know that we're exiting our position in your stock. Like, do you not know how this world works? You know, it was this gushing, you know, and how thrilled they were and how it was great. They'd been searching to have a female leader of a portfolio company. And I was on their website for probably, you know, a couple of years after they had completely exited their position. And it was just kind of this disconnect, like you're speaking to, Pardis, of like, it's not necessarily quantity and we can't have bean counting. It has to be also an element of quality to really get there so that it doesn't become just to check the box. And you almost have two tiers because that's, you know, we would all die if something like that happened. But yeah, certainly something that you encounter for sure.
That was Dr. Aoife Brennan, president and CEO of Synlogic Incorporated, a clinical stage company creating transformative medicines, and Dr. Pardis Sabeti, who heads her own lab, mapping the genome to discover new cures for diseases. They joined me in conversation as part of the WBUR City Space series, Phenomenal Women. And we'll bring you a fuller look at that conversation in a special Memorial Day show, so stay tuned for that. You can find out more about the series on our website, radioboston.org. And next month, dancer and choreographer Michelle Dorrance, founder and artistic director of Dorrance Dance and a MacArthur Fellow. You will not want to miss it.